Welcome to episode 4 of season 4. We are going to talk about emotional intelligence and leadership development in our episode with Mark King titled Artistry in Life. What does emotional intelligence involve and how can we make artists, creatives, and leaders smarter and more effective leaders when it comes to their leadership development? I can't wait to unpack this episode with you all as we talk with Mark King. Enjoy. Maayong Adlaw, welcome to episode 4 of season 4 for Philippine X and Wellness Podcast. I am your host, Cheryl Sampson Ramirez, and my pronouns are she, her, sha. As we evolve on this health and wellness platform, Dr. Pao taught us about disability justice and how to make our podcast more accessible. Moving forward, we'll be applying the practice of audio descriptions in the beginning of our episodes, as you initially heard in our previous episode. With that, currently I am wearing a gray t-shirt, a eyeglasses frame that is rose gold with gold accents. I have gold hoop earrings, silver headphones on, and in my background, I have a curtain that's white with gray zigzags. You'll also hear us introduce ourselves before we speak to differentiate who's speaking as we move throughout the podcast with multiple guests, and we'll be adding image descriptions to our social media posts. Thank you, Dr. Pao, for educating us around how to be more inclusive and to widen accessibility for folks with disabilities within our community. Following our last episode, The X in Philippine X with Dr. Pao Bustan and Gia Sotero Dakayanan, this month we'll be talking about artistry in life. Our guest for this episode is Mark King, life practitioner, culture creator, personal coach, artist, creative, and activist. As mentioned in previous episodes, all views discussed are for informational and educational purposes only. It's not meant to be medical advice, nor does it constitute therapy or professional advice. Always consult with your healthcare practitioner, especially before starting any exercise or new health program, or a qualified mental health professional for your particular condition. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome to our podcast, Mark King. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well. How are you, Mark King?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be here, excited for this podcast.
And we typically like to open our episodes with knowing where our guests are from. Usually when you meet any Filipinx in the community, usually the first question is, oh, so where are you from in the Philippines?
Right.
So to your knowledge, where are both sides of your family from and where are you currently streaming from?
Okay, my mother is from Santo Tomas, Batangas, and my dad is from Antipolo, which is about a couple hours northeast of Manila. More specifically, he resides in Tanay now, which is also up in that same area. I am currently recording out of Los Angeles, California.
Awesome.
Near Hi-Fi.
Okay, me too. Yeah, your neighbors.
Yes.
So let's start with the title at hand, Artistry in Life. Mm-hmm. Now, this also is the title of your website, right? So explain to us what artistry in life is and what it represents.
So artistry in life is my coaching practice, and it's based on emotional intelligence and leadership development. I provide tools, a framework, and perspectives that allow people to really navigate through life with a lot more ease, flow, and grace. And with that framework and with those perspectives, they hopefully are able to carve out their own artistry in life.
All right. Now that we know what artistry in life is, tell us about your origin story and what events led you to do this work. So What is your why?
Wow. Okay. So my origin story, man, it's interesting when you ask that question, because as you, I'm sure you're familiar with, when you do any kind of therapy or life coaching, the origin story goes back even further than we thought it was going to be, that we initially thought. But for all intents and purposes, my personal development story started just through my own depression. I was working in nonprofit with a Filipino American theater company called Bindlesif Studio out of San Francisco. I was one of the co-founders and former artistic director there, and also involved with other nonprofits in the area. One of the things that became a obstacle for me was my emotions. My emotions were coming to a head based on previous experiences as I was growing up. And it expressed itself in anger, frustration, depression. I'd noticed for myself that at one point I was looking at pictures of myself and I was not smiling in any of the pictures. And it really caught my attention and put awareness on my actual state of being, how I was really feeling. And I started to realize that that depression was something that was growing. And it really got me to a dark place. And just out of pure survival, I started trying to do my own research into where that depression was coming from, trying to find tools on how I could actually try to overcome the depression. There was one book that I came across called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And it's a book that really stood out to me because that's exactly what I was feeling. The moment was a lot of fear. I was questioning my ways of being. I had a very low self-esteem and low self-worth, and my confidence level was really was very much waning. And that confidence, one of the things I experienced in that, and that lack of confidence, is the apartment that I was living at. I'd gone up and down these stairs hundreds, if not thousands, of times. And more than a handful of those times, I was going down the stairs and questioned my steps and almost killed myself just going down those stairs. And that's when I really started, started looking into other ways to really try to overcome that depression. It was a really, really dark place. And, you know, one of the things I've also shared in that depression is that I really felt what it was like to be on that fringe of craziness. You know, I had all these voices in my head that wouldn't stop. And the harder I tried to make these voices stop, the louder they got. And it was really, it was a very dark place. And that's when I found that book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And once I found that book, I was able to really get a foothold of what it is that I was experiencing for myself. And that allowed me to climb out of that deep, dark depression. And that started my whole personal development journey. So that's, you know, the origin of that journey. But since then, it's been quite a journey since then.
Now, if you feel comfortable, as you did that deeper dive, what were some things that you discovered that led to the roots of your depression while you were working at Bindlesif?
I've experienced racism growing up. I've experienced being bullied at a very young age. Everything that I would do was questioned, whether it was my grades, sports, or just even doing daily activities. People would like question like what it is I was doing. It caused me to question my ways of being. Really made to feel less than. That was expressed a lot in, or felt a lot when I was being bullied. And that bullying was not just your typical schoolyard bullying, just pushing kids, being pushed around. But it was more racial stuff. I mostly grew up in predominantly white America, so There was a lot of people that looked like me, and because I stood out like that, I got everything. I got everything called in the book, and that not only extended in elementary, but also my middle school, my junior high, and even high school, and even throughout college, constantly experiencing some sort of level of racism, or just made to feel less than. One of the stories I share with folks is that when I was in college, I had applied to or went through the whole rush system in the Greek system, pledging a fraternity. And I'd done everything that the brothers had asked me to do, did all the interviews, do all the crazy shit that they ask you to do. And then one night, a bunch of brothers, they gave me a call and said, we need to have a meeting. And they were coming to my dorm room that night. I was like, oh shit, what the hell's going on now? What are these guys going to have me do? And there was a group of about maybe at least a dozen, maybe even like 15 to 20 folks, brothers that came up to my dorm room, and they flat out told me that I was going to be kicked out of the fraternity. I was like, well, why are you kicking me out of the fraternity? I've done everything that you guys have asked me to do. And straight to my face is because of the color of your skin. Mm. And that crushed me. So, and that was in my later years. So everything that was built up to that, and then later on when I moved to San Francisco, just feeling all those other pressures of feeling like not feeling made to feel less than, that all came to a head in San Francisco, and that's what led to my depression. So it wasn't just one particular event, but there was a lot of different things that took place that just exploded in my face. And that's when I started going into a deep, dark depression.
You're currently living in Los Angeles. You mentioned that this all happened while you were in San Francisco, and you talk about having to deal with the racism that came with white America. Were you living in other cities prior to San Francisco where you had the accumulation of these experiences? And if so, where were these places?
Yeah, you know, I think in every place that I've lived, I've experienced some sort of level of racism, some places more than others. I've lived in Chicago. I was removed to Tucson, Arizona. Lived in San Ramon. I've lived in Folsom. Part of my time in Atlanta, Georgia, and Athens, Georgia, where I got my undergrad at University of Georgia. I lived in a lot of places in the South. Lived a bit overseas, and then finally made my way back to California, where I felt a lot more comfortable because there was a lot more people that looked like me, especially up in the Bay Area and also in Los Angeles area. And even still, like, there have definitely been times where I've experienced some level of racism in San Francisco or in LA, but definitely not to the degree I had experienced it, like living in Georgia or in other places in the South.
Got it. Now, a lot of this started happening while you mentioned you were artistic director at Bindlestiff.
Mm-hmm.
Were there certain events that you feel were triggering these emotions to come out, or this depression to unfold?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was working at Bindlestiff Studio, and when you're working with a lot of artists and creatives, and even as activists, we're very in touch with our emotions, right? Or we're very aware of our emotions. But a lot of times we just don't know what to do with those emotions, and they end up being expressed in very toxic patterns or toxic behaviors. Mm-hmm. And there was definitely some toxic communication that was taking place and toxic behaviors within these various organizations that I was involved with. Not to throw shade on anybody, it's just where we were at the time. But that really started to lead into my own depression, again, accompanied with all the other stuff that I wasn't able to heal from my past, or just growing up and being a growing up as being a child and then into young adulthood.
And I asked you this, Marking, because it's a common thing that I might have heard through my own experiences with community organizing and activism within the community. And even our past guests mentioned that they were needed to take a break from community involvement because they were starting to feel psychosomatic symptoms or the impact of stress on their health. And that's why I was kind of asking you to maybe see if through your journey, if you feel that there is a thread of things that are happening to cause this common burnout that folks in our community experience and within your own story.
Again, because when you're doing the arts, when you are an activist, you are very passionate about what it is that you do. Mm-hmm. And that passion can take you a long way. But if you're not paying attention to in that self-care that you need for that long marathon, we end up doing things outside of ourselves that are not, they're more outward as opposed to inward. We're taking care of other people and other people's needs as opposed to taking care of our own. And I feel like in my experience in BindleSIF and other organizations that I was involved with during that time, that's what a lot of us were doing. We were just giving and not receiving, or not giving to ourselves. We were giving to everybody else. And that really led to some patterns that started off as little micro behaviors, but then when they're not addressed, they just compound, and then it expresses itself in frustration or depression or anger, lashing out, sending emails that you shouldn't have sent. You know, that's been, there's been instances of that where you say something in the heat of the moment and you can't take it back. And then it's all about, you know, damage control, putting out the fires, and that all of that just starts to become an emotional weight and an energetic weight on everybody. Again, it just compounds the situation. So yeah, that's one of the things, like, when I say that we're very in touch with our emotions, we're very passionate with our emotions, which is great. We're aware of those emotions. But if we're not doing anything, if we don't have practices that help to understand what those emotions are, where they're coming from, and how to navigate through them, how to use them more effectively, then we get things like depression, or we get stressed out, we have health issues, so on and so forth.
Therefore, from there, that's why you're focusing on specifically developing and helping others develop their emotional intelligence. And that came from also your leadership experience with BindleSIF?
In large part, yes. You know, it's crazy how we as artists and creatives, we want to tell our story. We want to create impact. And a lot of times we get on our own way and we don't tell the story that needs to be told. We don't put on production that needs to be put on at a theater, or we don't write the script that the world needs to see on the silver screen, because we get in our own way. We question our abilities. We question our worth. Is our story good enough? Does my voice even matter? Does my art matter? Does my perspective matter? And a lot of times when we fall into that trap, we don't tell those stories. And there are people out there that are waiting for us to tell that story, to be inspired, to carry the torch, to carry the fight, to move forward and create the change that we all want.
Mm-hmm. So why focusing specifically on emotional intelligence and leadership development? I know when we talk about helping others, it could be a really broad, vast world of wellness, mm-hmm. as you can see is evident with this podcast. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to hone in on these two areas more specifically?
You know, it's interesting. I primarily work with artists, creatives, and activists. Again, this work is for anybody and everybody. Part of the reason why I focus on artists, creatives, and activists and leaders is because that's my past. That's my experience. So I can resonate with that and connect with people at a different level because there's context there that we share. But one of the things that I really realize is that with artists and creatives, we are the expressions of humanity. We talk about what makes us sad. We talk about what makes us happy. We talk about what provides us joy. We talk about what pisses us off, what really angers us, what frustrates us. And when we are able to express those feelings, and if they're loud enough, then as activists, we act upon those expressions and we create laws, we create policy, we create change. And these are people who are typically in leadership positions. So be able to help those individuals in those areas and being able to help them really understand at a deeper level how to get out of their own way and really appreciate who they are as individuals and understand that they are gifts, then we're able to really start to create impact in the world. Because if everybody realizes that gift that they truly are, and we're able to do that collectively, then that's how we create impact. That's how we create change in the world that we want. Mm-hmm. And I really believe it's a very grassroots level. Now, I do focus on leaders, but leaders at the grassroots levels, because leaders right now in today's politics and in corporate America, to try to provide emotional intelligence at that level, not to say it can't be done. I mean, I'm talking in a very general statement, but a lot of those people they're beholden to power and greed and self-interest, and it's harder to create change at that level. So for me, it's really about being able to, the biddle stiff is grassroots. I've always been, not always, but I've practiced for the longest time that grassroots, if everybody's mobilized, you can create change. And now I'm just focusing more on the emotional intelligence component of it with leaders who are artists, who are creatives, who are activists, and are conscious about creating impact in the world.
How long have you been doing this work as a personal coach or running this coaching program?
As officially as a coach, since about 2018, 2019, that's when I really started to dive into at a deeper level, personal development and coaching. As far as personal development has been concerned, though, it's been over 20, 25 plus years. And what's interesting is that in my journey to becoming a coach and even in personal development, one of the things that was really frustrating for me was that as I was doing the personal development journey and finding out all the different sources, all the different information, the different frameworks, it was met with a little resistance that I imposed on myself, because 99.9% of the people I was getting information from were white folks, and they didn't look like me. So there wasn't the resistance I created for myself is, even though that the information was good, how can you really speak to what it is that I'm going through if you have no context of what it is that I've experienced in my life as a person of color? And then when I started going into coaching, and being coached, I was sharing this concept or my ideas about what I was experiencing with a coach who happened to be also white, but she was someone that I really connected with and resonated with. And in that program that I was taking, there's a saying, well, if it's meant to be, it's up to me. And she posed that question to me. She said, well, if it's meant to be, what if it's you that's supposed to fill that gap? And I was like, oh, shit. You just called me out. And when she did that, it really opened up my eyes and really forced me to ask myself the question of like, yeah, if it is meant to be, if it is me that's supposed to fill that gap. And that's what I ended up doing. I ended up pursuing coaching and developed my own framework, interpretation of the information that was out there so that it could help reach people in our communities, because I realized that there is a gap. There has been a gap of this type of work in people of color community, but definitely in the Filipino community. I'm super pleased that, you know, in these past few years, there's definitely been more people in the wellness industry, more women than there are men. But at least there's some out there. And, you know, my intention is to really be able to provide these types of tools, this framework in a manner that resonates with them, because I'm also a person of color. Whenever I get a chance to fill that gap with folks and provide that information and just create awareness around emotional intelligence in our community, then, you know, I'm on board with that. It's one of the reasons why I love that you asked me to be on this podcast, because that helps that narrative for sure.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully it helps others out there that are going through a similar experience that you are, just being able to share. Now, you were an artistic director. You went through depression. You found this book that really kind of helped you untangle all of the different traumas that you found were rooted in your childhood experiences or growing up in white America. How did you make the transition from being artistic director into now starting a coaching program as Artistry in Life?
That's a great question. You know, it's interesting. When I first started doing sketch comedy, it was with a group called Tongue in a Mood, and the directors were Alan Manalo and Joyce Juan Manalo. And in that process, just in acting in general, it's a study of human behavior. At least part of my approach in acting is a study of human behavior. And when I started directing, I was using that as context to help inform my directing. And I would actually incorporate like life skills without really knowing that that's what I was doing. I was talking about ownership and accountability and ego and implementing that type of language in the directing itself. Like, you know, some of the plays that I've directed, which was years ago, people still hit me up every once in a while and be like, bro, remember the time you were talking about respect and consideration, ownership and accountability? That shit still resonates with me today. And I'm like, oh my God. And it informed for me like, wow, I was actually doing some life coaching then without really life coaching, knowing that I was doing that. So it seemed like a natural progression, interestingly enough, with my own experiencing my own depression, my own toxic patterns and behaviors that I got to identify for myself, being able to dive deep into that, get a better understanding of the language, the tools, the frameworks, and coming up with my own ideas and own philosophies and own concepts. The natural progression is like, yeah, you know, I get to move into coaching. That's actually has been, even though I started off wanting to be a creative, being up on stage, being up on the silver screen, my life took a turn and led me into coaching. And it's something that really feeds my soul. And I always tell one of the things I tell my clients is do what makes your soul smile. And coaching for me definitely makes my soul smile. It's very much like directing. It's one of the things I like to say with my clients. It's like I'm helping with character development for your life. And my approach is very much wearing a director's hat. And the other parallel in that is, you know, when I was directing before, there were plenty of opportunities where I was able to take someone who had no experience on stage to get them through a production, and now you can't even get them off the stage. That transformation that you're able to help assist with an actor is the same kind of high that I get when I'm helping a client move from point A to point B or figure out what makes their soul smile. There's a transformation that they're able to experience for themselves that is such a beautiful high. And I'm very blessed and very fortunate to be able to take part in that and share in that experience of that transformation, because it's just awesome. I mean, I'm sure you know what it's like too, doing therapy work. Like when you see people get their aha moment, or they're able to overcome something that's been such a debilitating event for them, that when they are able to get over that or move through that, that's a liberation that I feel like everybody deserves to experience in their life.
Yeah, it's an unexplained joy that nothing else, there's not really many other things comparable that brings that type of joy when you're able to feel that reward and help someone in the process find, you know, their joy.
Yeah. Yeah. Find some peace, because it's a tough world out there, as we all know.
Sure, sure. Now, you define yourself, Marquinha, as a life practitioner, culture creator, personal coach, while also being an artist, creative, and activist. On your website, you also mentioned that you focus on coaching rather than counseling or mental health. So how would you differentiate between your coaching program, mm-hmm. per se, from that of counseling or traditional mental health?
You know, it's interesting. With coaching, there's a goal that you're trying to meet, and you help in the accountability of trying to attain that goal. In therapy, there's a lot more identifying what the root causes or issues that are coming up for you, the root of the traumas that we may have experienced in our past. And in some cases, they're providing tools to help you overcome those traumas. If the extremes of life coaching and therapy had a baby, that's where I would fall in. I am definitely the person that will hold you to account. If there's a goal that you're trying to attain, I will hold you to account. I am your fucking cheerleader. I will help guide you. I'm the Sherpa for your life's journey. I will help you get there. And I am not afraid to do the deep dive with you as well. Like if there's some sort of trigger that you're experiencing that reminds you of a trauma of the younger versions of yourself, we'll go there. We'll identify exactly where that trauma originated from. We may we'll address it with some shadow work, some somatic work, somatic healing, to help you provide tools to hold it differently. You know, there's a saying that I use a lot: we're not the way we are because of our past. We are the way we are because of how we hold the past. And part of what I get to do is, for any of those traumas that this person, a client, may experience, I provide them tools and a perspective to allow them to heal through that process, and then also be able, in that healing, be able for them to hold it in a different way, so it no longer has that an emotional charge or attachment to it anymore. And then they can start seeing like how these things didn't happen to them. They start to see and start to feel energetically how it is actually happening for them.
Well said. We are at the halfway point, so would you like a break?
Let me share this on real quick. Intentions versus expectations. When you have expectations, there's usually there's some expectation. You want to get something done. The problem with expectations is that a lot of times we don't meet those expectations, so we set ourselves up for disappointment. The other part of expectations, let's say you do reach that expectation, what if you are limiting yourself? Right? So it's better to go into a situation without expectation, but just be intentional. Just be like, I'm going to get this done. And whatever comes of it, you're going to learn something from it. It could even exceed what it is that you were thinking about. So intentions versus expectations. When I was a little kid, I was really competitive. I was always the small kid, so I had to look for different ways to kind of stand out, and that competitiveness was one of those ways. Spelling bee. This is my opportunity to shine. So there's like 20 of us, and there's a classroom full of kids, and my turn comes up, and the word I get is baloney. I said, I got this. I'm not 100% sure, but I can kinetically just figure this bad boy out. I'm not moving to the next round. Baloney. B-A. L-O-N-Y. Baloney. And oh, shit, really? Okay, I got it. Baloney. B-A-L-O-N-E-Y. I was like, damn. And I was just slowly but very intensely being crushed. I'm like, I'm in third grade, so I'm just getting crushed, and I start like, and then I just lose. I just start crying, and everybody, and as soon as I start crying, everybody starts laughing. And that was a really, like, that was a very traumatic moment for me. Like, that scarred me. Like, you guys know, I do coaching, so part of the work that I get to do is, like, revisit these younger versions of myself. And so, you know, part of the conversation I had with that younger version of myself was like, bro, I feel that you're sad, and I get it. It's really tough. And you know, you really did the best that you could, and you carried that for a long time. And I just want to say how courageous you are for having to carry that, how brave you are in carrying that burden, and you no longer have to carry that anymore, because I'm here and I can take care of you. And more importantly, what you really get to know is fuck baloney, bro. You don't even like baloney. You like ham. You love ham. And that's how I healed the younger versions of myself. B-O-L-O-G-M-A. Fucking baloney.
Now, let's talk more about artistry in life, Mark King. Tell us more about what your program consists of and what its components are. You mentioned earlier that your target audience are leaders, artists, and activists. So tell us more about what our community will experience once they sign up for your coaching program.
Sure. My flagship program is a three-month program. The first month is an introduction to the tools and the framework. And in the tools and the framework, we identify what your mission statement is, and then also provide you a framework that allows you to make clear and impactful choices as it pertains to what your mission statement is. There's a lot of energetic work helping to elevate your communication, your self-talk practices. And the second month is a practice using the tools and the framework. And then the third month is a full-on integration of the practice. So it's a three-stage process that we really get to, you know, provide you the tools and the framework and just get used to using the tools and the framework, and then an integration of the practice. It's very much like, you know, if let's just say, for example, for all those sports fans out there, if you play baseball, you get a batting coach. It's really about really understanding how to hold the bat, how to get the proper stance, getting your elbow up, the positioning, and learning how to follow through on that swing. It's the same mechanics in that sense as it is for the practice in artistry and life. I think one of the things that, you know, with artistry and life, what people get to know about artistry and life is that, well, let me back it up by saying this. To me, the success and failure of any relationship is based on how well we're able to communicate with each other. Simple math. If we have great communication, then we're able to have a healthier relationship with each other, and we can be able to move from point A to point B more effectively and efficiently. But more importantly, really paying attention to our inner dialogue. If we have shitty self-communication practices, we tend not to have a good outlook of our ways of being. So part of what the goal is to really elevate that inner dialogue, be aware of the language that we're using, not just words, but also energetically, and be able to provide different practices in helping to elevate that inner dialogue. Because when you start to elevate that inner dialogue, you'll start to have a healthier relationship with self. And then when you have a healthier relationship with self, then guess what? You start to have a healthier relationship with everything else in your life, whether it's a person, whether it's a place, whether it's an event, whether it's other people. You just start having a different outlook on how you can maneuver through life. So one of the big pillars in artistry and life in the framework is really helping to elevate that inner dialogue and giving you the tools and the framework to really understand where these voices and thoughts are coming from, and really allow yourself to make those discernments and distinctions, and then make a powerful choice on how to move forward that's in alignment with your mission statement and with your North Star.
Let's take it back to the Filipino community, since it's Filipinx and wellness. Your coaching program is not specific to a particular racial or ethnic group, and we have listeners, we have community that listens to our podcast that aren't also Filipino or Filipinx. Why do you think, though, Filipinos globally, since we speak to a global audience, in particular would benefit from your coaching program? And what do you feel like your coaching program would help to address when it comes to the Filipinx or Filipino community?
You know, it's interesting. That's a great question. You know, as I've done this work, especially coming and wearing the lens of being Filipino, you start to see a lot of the generational patterns that exist, and the toxic patterns that exist. A lot of the patriarchal toxic patterns of behaviors that are prevalent, and also from the matriarchal perspective as well, you see some toxic patterns and behaviors. But being able to identify those things in our communities is of value, because a lot of times I feel like we get pigeonholed into what it is our parents want us to do as opposed to what it is that we want to do in life. And we get shackled and bound by those patterns, those behaviors. And a lot of times we end up living a life for others as opposed to ourselves, at the expense of ourselves. And how that can manifest itself is the obvious of just misery within our communities. But a lot of times, that stress gets so exacerbated because they're living a life that's not theirs.
Mm.
You know, sometimes the unfortunate thing of death happens. Whether it's we're stressed out, and that stress becomes high blood pressure, and that becomes a heart attack, that becomes cancerous, or sometimes it just becomes suicidal. And I feel like because there's a lack of emotional intelligence awareness in our communities, in the Filipino community, that if we don't start to pay attention to that number those generational patterns are just going to continue. And that's why I feel like the work that I get to do and create more awareness around in our communities is something that I think is very important, so that, you know, we can start to evolve in the way that we should be evolving, as opposed to de-evolving by living a life that's not necessarily ours, but because we don't want to dishonor our family, or we don't want to disappoint our parents. Interestingly enough, that's not just a Filipino story. It's every immigrant story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We all start to realize that, and sometimes we realize it too late. We're in a job that we can't stand, and it's just becomes miserable, and then we get resentful, and then sometimes that leaks out onto our immediate family, and sometimes that ends in divorce, or, you know, any other of the scenarios that I spoke about before. And, you know, I think we do ourselves a disservice if we don't start paying attention and creating awareness and practices around these different tools that we have. And, you know, emotional intelligence is just one of those things. Leadership development is just one of those things. There are plenty of other practitioners out there that are fighting the fight for the community. And I'm just one of those lucky people to be standing shoulder to shoulder with some of these folks.
Mm-hmm. Now, does your family understand the nature of what you do or what you provide? And how do you begin to explain to them what you're doing? Because I can imagine that conversation being an interesting one.
Yeah, it is a very interesting conversation. My mom is a little bit more, I think she sees it more because she's had to do a little bit of more personal development, more modernized personal development in her experience. But she always tops it off, like, well, did you make sure to go to church today? So it's definitely old school. My dad he's also very, very old school. Especially, Filipino man, we don't talk about our emotions. Talk about your emotions, you're weak. Or you just get over it. Stop complaining. You're too sensitive. Like I've definitely had those conversations with my dad, and, you know, it used to really bother me. But again, as you do this work, you start to realize that we're a product of our environment, and you get to make active choices on how you decide to move forward. But you also recognize that, you know, for my dad, for my mom, they did the best they could with the tools they had.
Right.
And I'm super grateful for that. Even though I may not agree, more so on my dad's side, like how he approaches emotional intelligence by not even acknowledging it in some cases. But I also get the respect. Like, that's his come from. That's what he grew up with. He grew up in the time of war. He grew up in the time of, like, if you didn't do what you were told, it was going to cost lives, because that's what his dad was. That was his model of parenting. So, you know, even though I'm not able to have these deeper kind of conversations with, let's say, for example, with my dad, there's still a level of understanding that that I bring to the table when I do have these conversations, and they don't have that emotional charge as they did before of, like, you just don't fucking understand me. What the fuck is your problem? Like, no, it's really getting a deeper understanding of where my come from is, where his come from is, and finding, and also doing my own healing work around that. It's allowed me to really create the healthy boundaries, to have better, clear types of communication with my dad. It definitely doesn't come without its challenges, but, you know, it's a communication style that works, and that has an opportunity to evolve as well.
Hmm. Tell us more about your client base. Have they been mainly in the U.S.? What is, like, the demographic of your clients that you serve?
Yeah. I was trying to think. Yeah, all of them have been stateside. And there are some people that I've coached out in the Midwest, some in the East Coast, mostly on the West Coast. All of them, artists, creatives, and activists.
Mm-hmm.
99% of them are people of color. Mm-hmm. 90% of those are definitely Filipino. But the one thing that is super consistent is that each one of those people in some capacity are leaders. And that was something that I really started to note for myself, that, yeah, these people that I've been working with, they hold some sort of leadership capacity, and that's when I really decided to dial it in on leaders, because those are the ones that they're more intentional. They're more about intentional with the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. It's usually tied to creating some sort of impact. And when I say impact, it's not worldly impact, although some of them are just like, yeah, I want to fucking change the world. But some of them are just interested in just creating impact in their little bubble. And that, to me, is just as fucking powerful. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
Again, if everybody's collectively being the gift that they truly are in whatever world that they're in, if we're all collectively doing that, then that's how we get to create impact with the world at large. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm all down for that.
Right. I mean, little ripples in a big pond.
Yep, exactly.
What's your gender and age demographic typically?
You know, it's been, it's been your 20 somethings all the way up to 60s. And just recently, I'm super excited. I have a teenager that I will be starting up, next week. Still in high school, so obviously the next step is college. So I'm super excited to work with that young individual. In partly because part of my nonprofit work in San Francisco was working with youth. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the power of, like, and the school that I was working with, these are all was an after school program, and it was a continuing ed school. So, like, this is the last stop for these kids. Like, they're either going to juvie, going to jail, or they're going, you know, or there's high potential of just, like, living in street life, and we all know how that can unfold sometimes.
Yeah.
But being able to see those kids given an opportunity to say yes to something, Oh my gosh. The magic that these kids were able to create for themselves was amazing. So now being able to start working with, you know, these younger adults, especially with the tools and the experience that I've had, that I have now, and being able to share that, those concepts and practices, I'm super excited about doing that. Cause I, you know, in my own journey, like after being, having access to this information and being able to practice using this information, man, I could only imagine if I had this in my 20s,
for sure, how
my life would be significantly different. Definitely a lot more stress-free, for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, starting early is always, it reaps so many benefits, and just the power and the impact that you can make for the next generation when you start at an early age to do this work can really be transformative.
Yeah, and not just transformative, not just transformative for the individual, but
for sure,
transformative for the community, for the
and
people
everyone they interact with.
100%. It's like it's a ripple effect that just can overtake the entire pond.
Right.
And that's exciting. That's super exciting.
Excited for you, Marking. So how does someone sign up for Artistry in Life? Like, is there a what is the cost of your coaching program? Do you offer payment plans or scholarships? Tell us more about what that looks like.
The cost for a 3-month session with me is $3,200. That can be broken up into 3 monthly payments. At some point there will be a scholarship fund that'll be available for folks that may not have the funds to do coaching, but you know, I definitely like to work with people who, if they show willingness to create change for themselves, I'll make it work. I'll figure out a way to make it work. You know, in the future, I plan on holding more workshops, and that'll be a low entry point for folks to be able to experience and get some valuable information on how to start creating their own artistry in life. And the way anybody can work with me is reach out through my website at artistryinlife.com. I am a big fan and user of Instagram. DMing me through Instagram is a great way to contact me. And then also too, for the listeners out there, like, know that when you contact me, it's not like, okay, you're in and you get where's the $3,200. No, it's more of an opportunity for us to have a conversation, to feel each other out, see if I can be of assistance to you, if I can provide that support, and an opportunity for that person to be like, no, to vibe me out, see if we click. The one thing that people really get to know is that when they're searching for a coach, like, take advantage of these. A lot of these coaches call them discovery calls. I just call them just having a conversation, but really take that an opportunity to really feel these potential coaches out so that you feel comfortable. Because at the end of the day, if you're not feeling comfortable, then that's going to cause you to really approach it more from, you know, with your defense mechanisms up. And for you to really start doing deep work,
yeah,
you got to feel comfortable in that vulnerability. And I know how precious and how valuable and how important it is to have that vulnerability and to hold the space for that vulnerability. Like, that's a sacred space, and it can't be fucked with. And if you feel like you don't have that comfortability with people that you want to work with, like, look for another coach. You know what I mean? Get yourself an opportunity to have another conversation. One of the things I like to say, like, if you're at that point, whether it's with me or somebody else, just go get a fucking coach, because it'll do you wonders. It'll shave so much time. It'll save you so much energy. It'll save you so much heartache and hardship and yeah, you know, when you make that type of investment in yourself and you find the right match, wow. Again, it's a liberation that everybody gets to experience for sure.
Now, during your discovery calls, do you ever find like, this might not be a match and refer out? Do you have other partnerships that you've established where you might refer out to other individuals in your network?
Yeah, for sure. If I feel like there's something that's, and that hasn't been a lot, but there are times where I'm like, yeah, you know what I've actually gone through coaching sessions, just realized like, hey, you know what? I'm not sure if I'm the right person for you. I definitely have recommendations. And it just depends on the needs of that person, what it is that what their specific needs are. But I'm more interested in making sure that the person that is seeking the help is getting the right help. Because it, you know, if I'm trying to force something with somebody and they're not getting it, it's not an effective use of time. And definitely not an effective use of resources. And I'm more than willing to point someone in the right direction if there's someone else out there that might be better equipped or better able to handle the situation.
Got it. Outside of your coaching program, do you also do public speaking engagements, workshops, classes, retreats?
Yeah, I do do public speaking. I'm actively doing public speaking. I do. I mentioned before that I have done some workshops, and that is also in the works. To workshops and a retreat. I have partnered up with a couple of other people, individuals who are in the wellness industry and also storytelling. We're creating a workshop specifically designed for artists and creatives that'll help them to really be able to understand their mode of operation, getting clarity on the mode of operation, and also being able to tell their story more effectively so that they can expand on their reach with other people out there with their expertise or their insights of what it is that they're pursuing in life and how they want to help the world.
Mm-hmm. When you say artists and creatives, are you using that in a broad sense, like all forms of modalities, like within the artistic and creative world? Or do you have a particular niche that you specialize in?
No, if you're an artist, you're a creative, you are being in expression in some sort of capacity. And I feel like history tells us that how powerful art and obviously when you're creative, there's some sort of artistic expression that you're putting out in the world. And art changes minds, it changes worlds, it changes societies. And part of why I focus on these on artists and creatives and activists is because when we are in full expression of the ways of our ways of being, man, again, magic happens. And I want to create magic everywhere. If I can be a part of that, especially with artists and creatives who are better at their art, then you know my art is a life practitioner in coaching. That's how my art has been able to express itself. And if I can help other people be in full expression of their art and their creativity, it just makes for a great place. I want to be there.
Right. In the ring.
Right.
You also have a podcast, Artistry in Life. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it. What is your podcast and how could our community tune in?
My podcast is Artistry in Life. You can find that on YouTube / Artistry in Life, or you can search # Artistry in Life, one word. Artistry in Life is really about my practice. It's talking about the tools. It's talking about the framework. It's talking about these different perspectives. It's really designed to create more awareness around emotional intelligence and leadership development for our communities. One of the sayings that we use in there is helping people in our communities become better leaders. You know, I help with the information that we're providing. I hope to help artists, overcome their fears, get over their shit, fall in love with their greatness, helping leaders find their happiness. When you have happy leaders, people that are really invested in becoming better leaders and creating an environment for people that they're leading to be more, create more buy-in for themselves, in helping to attain their mission statement, that just, again, adds to the cause of really trying to create impact in the world. The Artistry in Life podcast is really helping to create awareness around emotional intelligence and leadership development.
Cool. How many episodes in are you?
Man, we've been producing stuff. The other iteration, the original iteration was, it's called Pimp and Peace. That was one of the original ideas. And, since then we've just been pumping out episodes. I don't know, maybe 40, 50 episodes.
Wow. Of content.
Maybe 30 to 40. But then we also have like all the shorts, all these like little, so there's a lot of content there.
Cool.
And one of the things that I was really wanting to show as well is like when we first started, this too, when you're first doing your podcast, you're running, fumbling, stumbling through all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
just getting even used to the whole idea of, I'm in front of a camera. How do I sound? What do I say?
Mm-hmm.
I was very intentional about showing the beginnings and where we're at now so that people can see that there is a progression, because in life coaching, there is a progression, there is a process. So part of that is to also illustrate, see that there's growth in what it is that I'm doing, to see. Now I am very much intentional about practicing what I preach and showing what process is and allowing people to just trust in the process, allowing myself to trust in the process.
And are your guests typically people that have gone through your program, or are they artists, activists, and leaders that you identify to bring in with you?
That's going to be later. Right now, really what the podcast is, a friend of mine who's the host, Ray Cardona, he's a host on the podcast. And it's more of us just having a conversation and talking about these different topics, the framework, artistry in life, seeing how it applies in everyday situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be moving eventually into bringing on some of these clients that I've coached that are comfortable about talking about their process. And then, we've dabbled in tossing around ideas about getting other guests on and maybe potentially even doing live coaching, who knows, but that's definitely something that it'll eventually evolve into.
Cool. Now, are you a one-person team, Marky? Do you have a team also that's running this with you?
I mentioned Ray Cardona.
Yeah.
And he helps more so with the production of the podcast. Other than that, it's me. It's me wearing all the different hats. And it's there's a challenge to it. I know where I'll say this. I know where I shine, and I know where, I have to spend more time to get that shine. And most of that is really just on the business side of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that the website's done, the structure of the business, getting the funnels or the outreach or the marketing, like those are the things that aren't as second nature to me as much as like the coaching. Like I'll sit all day and talk about coaching with anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get to wear, just like any other entrepreneur, I get to wear a lot of different hats.
Always a lot of moving parts, right? With anything that you grow.
And, you know, like, if I wasn't passionate about what it is that I'm doing and how I'm able to be of service and contribute, it would be a big, big mountain to climb. Now it's just, you know, it's more of a hill that I got to get over.
Hey, I'll take a hill over a mountain.
Yeah, any day. Any day.
Speaking of which, so we're a wellness podcast, and we typically like to ask our guests what their own wellness routines and self-care practices consist of. For our community to witness, what are your own wellness routines or self-care practices, Markeen, that you'd like to share with us outside of your coaching program?
Yeah, no, that's another great question. You know, and it's really, when you're coaching, there's a lot of things, a lot of assignments and practices and that I create for everybody. And one of those is really developing a routine for themselves and to develop that consistency and discipline. And as I am giving, offering these instructions, I'm also, it's an opportunity for me to be like, okay, well, you're telling yourself too, right, bro? It's like, yeah, okay. I'm coaching myself in the same moment. So for me, I have a meditation practice that I do on the daily. I try to get at least one meditation in. It's usually a guided sleep meditation. But I also try to meditate in the mornings as well, whether it's a 15, 20 minute meditation. Sometimes I'll go as deep as an hour, hour and a half meditation. After I do the meditation practice, I definitely have a stretching and a workout routine. Nothing too intense, but enough to just get me in touch with my body. I do have a journaling exercise or practice that I have for myself. And then other ways I take care of myself is I play a lot of disc golf. So disc golf is basically like ball golf, but you have like a frisbee. There's a lot of different disc golf courses out in LA. So I'm very intentional about playing disc golf at least once or twice a week, just so I can get outside, get my vitamin D, get some exercise, be in nature. And every once in a while, I'll sprinkle in like some body work or massage. Just recently, I was able to do a sound bath out at the beach, which was phenomenal. Anne Esperanzate is her name. Sound bath. There's another woman that I also, she was very kind and generous with her sound bath. Her name is Lisa Gonzalez. Nipah Hut Wellness, I think, is her handle on Instagram. But yeah, just doing those types of things, you know, sprinkling a little bit of those practices in my own daily practice. Those are the ways that I really take care of myself. You know, as you go through these practices, the idea of mind, body, and soul totally means something different for me now. So part of my daily practice is making sure that I'm paying attention to those things, that I am giving time to my mental, emotional, and physical well-being, my mind, body, and soul.
Yeah, wow. For your meditation practice, do you practice with a particular style of meditation? I know there's different types of meditations out there.
You know, big influence of my meditation practice is informed by, I don't know if you know, Dr. Joe Dispenza.
No, tell us more.
Dr. Joe Dispenza, he's a gentleman who his story is he had actually was doing a race and got clipped by a truck when he was on his bike, and he apparently was paralyzed either from the waist down or from the neck down. In either case, the prognosis was not great. And long story short, he took it to another level, started doing some deep research on healing, healing self. And that led him to meditation and being able to heal himself through meditation. And he is actually able to do that. He found other models, other people who had experienced the same thing. He started doing a deep dive research into meditation and getting more into the neuroplasticity of meditation,
yeah,
quantum physics of meditation,
the science,
into the void. Yeah, exactly. He brings science to the woo-woo of meditation.
Uh-huh.
And that really has informed my practice. So I use his practice as a foundation for my meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not afraid to look at other folks. You know, I use breathing in my meditation. I'll focus on my breathing, or I'll focus on my third eye when I'm meditating. I'll listen to other guided meditations, just to kind of switch it up. But, you know, in the meditation world, you know, one of the things that they say, there is no bad meditation. So
yeah,
I try to get as much meditation as I can. And I'm always open to different types of meditation, but the ones that can get me into the void where I can start creating, like consciously creating while I'm meditating, those are the types of meditations that I tend to lean more towards into.
And your sleeping meditation that you mentioned, is that also Joe's, or how can folks get a hold of that if they're interested in it?
Yeah, if you search Joe Dispenza, Dispenza,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Joe Dispenza on YouTube, he has a bunch of guided meditations on there. You can also go to his website. Wow, Joe Dispenza is going to love me right now. But his stuff. But then there's also another YouTuber. It's called Rising Meditations. If you search Rising Meditations, they have a lot of great guided meditations, sleeping meditations that I definitely use a lot of. And it's a lot of these meditations, I try to make sure that they have these different frequencies or binaural beats.
Yeah.
Accompanied with some sort of affirmations, whether it's worthiness affirmations or abundance affirmations or, different messaging. I try to switch it up just so I don't get too bored with one particular style or one different messaging.
Sweet. And what a small world. You mentioned doing a sound bath recently with Anne Esperanzate. We are also in community with her. She just invited us last month to an event at Kubo Long Beach that she organized called Kapwa. And it was just an amazing opportunity to just be a part of that, the Long Beach community and beyond within the realm mm-hmm. of health and wellness. So shout out to Anne, too, for those of you that want to check out her sound baths that she offers. You could find her also on Instagram at, I believe, Anne.Esperanzante.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, I highly recommend. Her experience was a really good experience, especially out on the beach. And she was sharing with me about Kapwa and the whole Long Beach community.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely excited to find out more about her and her community down in Long Beach. And just see the network with other people who are down for the cause. You know what I mean?
For sure. Now, as we begin to close, you mentioned your website URL earlier. If I can ask you to repeat that again. And if our community has additional questions, you mentioned they could also DM you. If you can share with our community how they can reach you if they have additional questions.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that opportunity. Yeah, folks, if you want to check out my website, you can go to artistryinlife.com. You can go to YouTube to check out the podcast and other content on there at YouTube/artistryinlife, one word, or you can search #artistryinlife and you'll see my logo up there, artistryinlife. On Instagram, you can find it at the same name, artistryinlife, on Instagram. And also on Facebook, you can find that as an Artistry in Life. my main activity has been Instagram and YouTube. So DM me there. If you want to reach out to me, you can also reach out to me via email at artistryandlife.official@gmail. That's also another way. But I think in today's world, at least for now, the trend is being Instagram. You can definitely contact me there. That's probably the easiest way to get in contact with me.
Yay. Final words, Mark King. Is there anything else that you would want our community throughout the diaspora to know when it comes to artistry and life that we haven't mentioned yet?
I touched on it a little bit, but again, if there's someone out there who has an inkling or is just feeling stuck, and they're not seeing the needle move, no matter what it is that they do, and they haven't found any kind of support, and they're looking, definitely seek out a coach. Whether again, it's with me or someone else, just get a coach, because it's going to help transform your ways of being into an opportunity to feel liberation that you may have not felt ever before in your life. And it's something that everybody should experience. And, you know, the only other thing that I'll say as well is, you know, do what makes your soul smile and nothing less. The only parameters around that are, make sure that whatever it is that you do is not at anybody else's expense, but more importantly, that it's not at your own expense. And if you do that, find what makes your soul smile. I guarantee you're going to find your own artistry in life, and that's a way to live. That's a good way to live.
Well said. Thank you again, Mark King, for talking to us about your emotional intelligence and leadership development program, Artistry in Life. We look forward to witnessing your journey unfold and can't wait to see what more you have in store for our artists, our creatives, and activists within our community. We'll continue to help share your upcoming work and opportunities as we stay connected in partnership.
Awesome. And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the conversation and having an opportunity to just create more awareness around emotional intelligence. Thank you so much. And thank you to your listeners.
For sure. And to our community, for our next episode, we'll be talking with Wilhelmina De Castro about psychedelic-assisted therapy. Stay tuned, as this episode will air on Wellness Wednesday, August 14th. As we close, we'd like to acknowledge once again our guest speaker, Mark King, our graphic designer and beat maker for our opening and closing track, Richie, our advisors, Allison De La Cruz, Rian De Los Reyes, and Safo Teologo, our community partners, SoCal Filipinos, Rising Filipinas, This Filipina, Filipino American Life, and all of our community members for your shares and support. As always, we'll share more about our guests' offerings on our Instagram stories and highlights for permanent access with any of their upcoming events. Be sure to follow us at Philippine X in Wellness on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and on X at Philippine X, the letter N, well, followed by the letters N and S. Don't forget to continue to hit like and subscribe on our Philippine X and Wellness YouTube channel. Thank you always for believing in us. Be well, everyone. Continue to take care of yourselves and each other. Madamo kit na nga salamat.
Thank you, everyone.
Poem by Lao Tzu goes a little something like this. When you're sad and depressed, you're thinking about the past. When you're worried or anxious, you're thinking about the future. You're always happiest in the present moment. So stay in the moment, my friend. Stay in the moment. Budang. Also younger than the sun. Thank you.
We'll be right back.